Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, the state released new guidance for theme park reopening, what that means for Disneyland, plus Disney's reaction to the news.
A pleasant surprise from Bob Chapek during the shareholders call. D23 celebrates 20 years of DCA. We finished our talk with former cast member Dave and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of March 10th, 2021. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. I don't know what was in the water this week, but we got a lot of new supporters, so thank all of you so, so much. I want to send a special shout out to Anna S., Ashley S., Chris M., Grace W., and Mary G. for supporting the show. This supporter helps make DL Weekly possible. The supporter Discord chat has been a great source of Disney magic from our supporters, like theme topic days, movie nights. We just had the movie night for Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which there was some great tidbits in there from Kate. So definitely, if you do join the Discord after these things, you can always go back, look at the history. If you'd like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
So Tag and I have some pretty exciting news. We actually were able to score Touch of Disney tickets for ourselves. Yes, that's right. We will be back in the Disneyland Resort later this month. Oh. I am so beyond excited.
Gonna be rolling around in the Esplanade.
Yes. So we did decide to have a socially distant and safe meetup. So if anybody is interested, more details to come, but that will be happening on Sunday, the 28th. So Sunday, March 28th, like 2.5 weeks from now. I can't believe that we're going to be in the Disneyland Resort, but so excited. Sunday, March 28th. 9 a.m. is when we're going to start it. We decided that we wanted to do it outside of the Touch of Disney event. So those of you that don't have tickets, don't feel like you're going to miss out. We want to meet as many weekly tiers as we safely can. More details on where the location is. We do have a weekly tier that's going to actually go and scout out a spot. We do have a couple of areas in mind, but we're not sure with traffic flow for the event if those areas are going to be as quiet as they are currently. So please keep your eyes and ears open. We will have more information on our social media.
We're going to try to do the socially distant thing, and mm-hmm. we're not going to try, you know, fist bump it,
yeah,
or whatever.
So it won't be like, even though it's 9 a.m., it's not going to be like meeting up for breakfast or anything like that. So we're going to have, you know, masks on, be as safe as we can. Of course, we'll take photos and chat with you all, but trying to be as safe as we can while we're out there.
We have a problem. If they open at 9 a.m., where are you going to get your coffee before then?
I'm just going to sit in the back corner of the meetup by myself, drinking my coffee until I'm done.
Yeah, but you got to go get your coffee.
We'll get it on the way. We have to go past Starbucks to get there. So
okay.
We might, if we're late, it's my fault.
Now let's get to the news.
The state of California released new guidance on the reopening of theme parks throughout the state. Theme parks can now open at 15% capacity in the red tier, 25% in the orange tier, and 35% in the yellow tier. Some other restrictions include no outdoor dining, limits on indoor attractions, visits are limited to residents of California only.
So everybody was excited because they said starting April 1st, everything can be open or whatever, which of course sounded like an April Fool's joke. And everybody went to this immediate reaction of, oh my goodness, Disneyland is opening on April 1st. Well, that's not the case because we're going to talk more about it here in just a minute. But this is good news. They're relaxing some things to not be as strict as they were before, mm-hmm. although they are being a little more strict on certain aspects of it. Yeah. So overall, great news. Could it have been better news for some people? Yes, but I think this was the responsible thing to do.
Yeah, so just to kind of go over it real quick here. So the main differences is currently Disneyland and all theme parks would have been closed in the red tier. The moderate or the orange tier, they would have been able to open. It was 25% capacity or 500 people, whichever was less. And it was limited to local attendees only. So it had to be people that lived in the same county as the park in the orange tier. And then the yellow tiers were open back up 25%. They didn't have any. You had to be in the county or the state thing. But yeah, anyway, so April 1st is when all the new guidelines come into play. So there's a couple wins, a couple things that maybe weren't wins, but overall, great, great news, like Tag said.
Well, Disneyland President Ken Potrock released a statement shortly after the revised guidelines were posted, stating that they are encouraged by the revisions and are looking forward to reopening in spring and getting thousands of cast members back to work, allowing other local businesses to open as well.
That's the thing that I'm just so excited about, right? Like, of course, yay that Disneyland is going to be, you know, like the end is near. We're almost there. But I'm just so excited for the cast members that get to return to work and crazy happy for all of the businesses nearby that have not been able to serve anyone for a year now. Because we actually, when we were booking our tickets and our trip for the end of this month, we had a couple of hotels that we really wanted to check out. Candy Cane Inn was one of them. Well, they're not open. Same thing with Howard Johnson's, still not open.
Right.
So we're actually checking out a new hotel this time around, which is going to be fun. But it was just really disheartening and just like really put things into perspective, trying to plan and just look at hotels and see just how, you know, how many there are out there versus how many are even open right now. So I cannot wait for all those people to get back to work as well.
Yeah, and it'll be nice because this, again, doesn't just affect Disneyland. So the hotels and stuff and businesses around Universal Studios, the same thing around, let's say, Knott's Berry Farm, things are going to be doing a lot better. So that is great.
Well, with the announcement, the very exciting announcement for the parks to be able to open as soon as April 1st, there are still a lot of things that have to land in place to actually be able for the parks to open. So first, Disney has to decide if opening at the lower capacity is financially possible. Also, cast members have to be called back to work and retrained. Part of this retraining is to become recertified on the attractions to be able to operate them in the state of California. Senior attraction operators need to be called back in earlier to get recertified so they can then train the other cast members to also get them certified.
Yeah, this was something that Mice Chat brought up that I honestly didn't even know, that in the state of California, when you're a ride operator, you get certified to operate the attraction, and that is only good for 1 year. So as of the 14th of this month, it will be 1 year since anything's been open. So all of the certifications lapse. So they're going to have to go through all this stuff. So plus, it takes time. I mean, you're going to call cast members back. Some people aren't going to respond right away. Some people might have already moved on to a different job or something. They're probably going to have to hire some new people, possibly. You know, it just takes time.
Oh, yeah.
There's a process to it.
Well, you know, and I was thinking about this. I was actually chatting with somebody, and, you know, it was one of those, like, when you really start thinking about it, it's like, okay, so the first thing I think about is the attractions. Those attractions have not been running the way that they are built to run
daily,
and
yeah,
used to be, and the whole, yeah, constant, like, what feels like 24 hours a day. But they haven't been running nearly as much as they had been. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of things that they're going to have to do to make sure the attractions are ready, not just like mechanically, but safety wise too, because, mm-hmm, right, that's a big concern. But then other things like food, those like restaurants and whatever are going to have to probably be scrubbed like top to bottom. They're going to have to restock all of the coolers and get, you know, there's just so many different things that have just kind of been put on pause in the resort that aren't used to be, you know, aren't things that are usually put on pause that they're going to have to redo. So it's just a lot of work to get it all back. I honestly would be amazed. I really think it'll probably take about a month is my just random gut guess for them to try and get everything like from start to finish when they can open, and that they still might not have everything done. It's just crazy.
Well, on the Disney Company shareholders meeting Tuesday, Bob Chapek stated that they hope to have Disneyland open by late April. Well, there is no date they are ready to announce, but if the cases in Orange County continue on the decline, guests could be welcomed back shortly after the Touch of Disney event ends on April 19th. Chapek said that they are calling back 10,000 cast members in preparation.
That's incredible. That's just so incredible. 10,000 cast members that are able to return back to their job at the happiest place on earth. I'm just so, so excited about that.
It was crazy because I had forgotten that the shareholders meeting was today. We record this on Tuesday evenings. And I was so busy today working on 100 other things that were not podcast related that in our Discord, we have a channel where like news pops in. And it was like, Bob Chapek announces Disneyland might reopen by the end of April. I was like, oh! So I'm very excited that mostly that these cast members can get back to work. And because we do not live in California, we probably will not be, even if we wanted to, some of the first people in the park. So, but I'm glad the cast members are getting back to work.
I don't know. I tell you what, after the experience, which we're going to get into later, the experience of getting tickets for A Touch of Disney, I can't even begin to imagine what it's going to be like to try and secure tickets to not only the reopening day, reopening week, or the reopening month of Disneyland and DCA. It's going to be
Well, see, what I think is going to happen is they're going to do the same thing they did with Disney World. If you have tickets that you bought before, you get priority. The good news for you and I, sort of, is I have a 5-day park hopper and we have a 3-day park hopper that we purchased beforehand. However, that doesn't quite work because one of us ain't going 2 days if that's the case. And the other thing, too, is just we don't know what it's going to be like. So we'll have to see. It'll be interesting.
D23 is hosting a virtual event to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Disney California Adventure. Tickets are free for D23 Gold members and $11.50 for D23 General members. The panel will include a multitude of Imagineers and others that work to bring DCA to life. The panel will be available for viewing from March 10th at 4 p.m. Pacific to March 26th at 11:45 p.m. Pacific. I love it.
I got tickets for this already.
It's like D23 in my living room. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be a panel with a bunch of Imagineers talking about all types of stuff. Yeah. It was funny because I saw this, I think, yesterday. I want to say they boasted about this. Well, tomorrow is when it shows up. So I did get a ticket for it. I'm very excited to log in and watch it. So the good news is that this actually lasts for, looks like, what? A couple weeks.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice. Anybody listening to this in the next couple weeks should be able to hop on and get that. The link directly to the event is in our show notes. If you like Teresa said, if you are a gold member, it's free. So like, why wouldn't you do it? And then for general members, D23 general accounts are free. Like you can be a D23 general account holder or whatever. The event is $10, but there's a $1.50 credit card processing fee. So I'm like, I'm just going to say $11.50 because you have to pay the credit card. You're not buying anything in person. Tickets for the Touch of Disney event went on sale last week with no specifics other than the date. Guests hit up the site at midnight Pacific time with no update. Then at 7 a.m., nothing. 8 a.m., nothing. Finally, around 9-ish, the button appeared to take guests to a queue to get tickets. This queue then led to another queue to actually get the tickets, which for most folks we talked to said more than an hour. Once guests got to the online sales page, the process was quick and easy with no major hiccups. So it wasn't a Shop Disney event.
Yeah, there were a couple hiccups when the queue first opened. People that got through the queue to get into the queue and we're in the real queue and then got to the front of the line, got a blank page. So there was some sort of glitch. So they did have to pause the queue towards the beginning to get whatever that was fixed. But then they were able to start it up again and no major issues after that. So for Disney events, I thought that was pretty amazing because, right, like you mentioned, Shop Disney events. The other big one that came to mind, and I was having flashbacks, was when for D23 and signing up for the different panels. So thankfully, we didn't have a D23 thing where they're like, whoop, sorry, doesn't work. We're going to try again in a couple weeks.
Oh,
thanks
yeah.
for your time. So it could have, for Disney, it went very, very smoothly. There, like I said, were a couple of hiccups. The thing that was crazy, though, is
it also wasn't. It wasn't a direct Disney website. It was like a ticket sales site. Yeah. It wasn't even linked to Disney.
It was there. A different hosting website. The other thing, too, that they did was when the ticket sales first opened, you could only buy tickets up to like the first couple weeks, first week or two in April. Well, the tickets were selling so quickly that Disney quickly added on more dates through April 19th. And yeah, everything sold out. I think I saw officially like around 5 p.m. Pacific,
That's not bad.
Is when things sold out. That could be wrong. We were lucky. Somehow the queue did seem to be random. Didn't matter when you logged in. It wasn't like first come, first serve. But we got super lucky. One of the accounts that we were logged into seemed to be in the front portion of the line. Yeah. So we were able to get in and get our tickets very quickly. I know I saw reports on different social media accounts and different people we knew that waited hours and hours and hours to get through. I think I saw, maybe it was the writers at the Laughing Place waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and actually the ticket sold out before they were able to get in. So I just, yeah. So we didn't try to be super crazy. I just happened to wake up at 2 a.m. and I was
2 a.m. Central.
Yeah, 2 a.m. Central, so 12 a.m. Pacific. So I was only a little crazy because I did go to bed with my iPad and my credit card on my bedside table. So I did check. We did check, and then I checked again when I like woke up for the day, which was 6 a.m. Central, so 4 a.m. Pacific. And then we kind of were checking on the hour, and it was some... I just remember it was some really weird time that we finally saw the button.
And poor Teresa,
19 minutes after the hour.
Poor Teresa was at work, and so once she clicked the button to buy tickets, it went to a site that was blocked on her work computer.
Yeah, I was like, no.
So she had to get on her phone. Producer James was actually lucky enough to get in on his phone, and he's the one who did all the magic.
Mice Chat has some new photos from the skies above Disneyland this week, giving us a glimpse into the park. Lighting was turned on down Main Street. The pink Lapacho trees are starting to bloom in the hub, and cocktail tables have been set up around Jolly Holiday on the Plaza Inn. The Frontierland Bridge is looking completed and ready to go for guests, and all the attraction work seems to be completed with the exception of the carousel. Over in DCA, Avengers Campus looks to be basically done on the exterior, just waiting for guests to come in and enjoy it.
Yeah, so I always like a good helicopter sky thing. I love, yes, anybody who listens and knows anything, I Google Maps everything because I just love the satellite view. So I love seeing these things. It does seem like they're getting a lot of things ready. I am curious about the cocktail tables that were set up, because those don't look to me like things that would be set up for regular guests, I guess. Sure. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're doing like a cast member appreciation event or something like that, or maybe they were getting ready to do like a Touch of Disney thing for Disneyland, but now it's moot.
You know, and I don't think it was that. I don't think they were gonna do like a Touch of Disney event. The tables don't look, how do I want to say it nicely, they don't look Disney enough for them to be
sure
like what would be in place for an event. To me, it looks like it's probably some way or like some maybe sign-in thing and something that they're doing with the cast members. Because, right, I'm sure they're trying to keep the cast members not grouped up, not inside. So they probably are having like meetings and such outside.
Oh, maybe. Instead. See, the first thing I thought when I saw it was, oh, some rich person booked the park for some event. Because that's what it looked like, because it looked very cocktail-y kind of things. The WandaVision photo op in Hollywoodland in Disney California Adventure has added a new prop. Spoiler alert if you have not finished watching WandaVision.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not spoiling. I'm just because you know this part of it.
Oh, yes, I know.
Agatha Harkness, director's chair from one of the last episodes of the show, is now set up in a fenced off area near the living room setup that has been there for a few weeks now.
The Walt Disney Company turns 100 in 2023, and the Walt Disney Archives are planning an exhibit to celebrate. The exhibit will premiere at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia in February 2023. A second staging of the exhibit will premiere in March 2023 for international audiences. More information will be available on D23.com in the future for this exhibit.
Of course, it's Walt Disney Archives exhibit, and it's 100 years of the Walt Disney Company, so there's going to be a ton of artifacts there. I am with you, though. I hope that the Bowers Museum opens when we're there so we can go see that exhibit, and I think this will also be pretty amazing. My curiosity is, how many things do you think will overlap between the two different like exhibits?
I don't know. That's hard to say, because remember, the Disney Archives did not start when the company started.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. I don't know. I feel like the archives is very proud of the things that they have. And so I do think there probably are some things that they do put out
frequently.
But then there's also things that they probably intentionally
Swap out
for sure. Because even the exhibit that we saw at D23, the heroes and villains, I did notice in some photos for the Bowers Museum that some of those same pieces were at the Bowers Museum. But then there's also a lot of new stuff that haven't seen too. So I think, yeah.
This is going to be tough because they're going to have two. They're going to have a permanent one at the Franklin Institute, mm-hmm. and then they're going to have another one that travels internationally. So obviously there's going to be two separate kinds of things, and now it's going to make me want to go see an international
one. I think we're going to have to road trip to Philadelphia in February of 23, or maybe March.
Once again, a new set of ears has dropped in Downtown Disney. This time, they are themed to look like the Mickey balloons that are so iconic. One of the ears is a pink Mickey balloon, with the other ear containing a purple Mickey balloon. This set of ears is heavier than the other set, so there is some padding to make them more comfortable to wear. The ears are also bi-coastal, as the purple ear says Disneyland Resort, while the pink ear says Walt Disney World. They also light up. You can pick them up for around $33, and they are also available on Shop Disney.
So when I first saw these, of course, we only saw pictures. We weren't able to see them in person. With pictures, though, I was more taken aback by the fact that the balloons were two different colors, because this, of course, is not the first time that we have seen iconic Mickey balloon ears. But every other time we've seen them, the first set was red, like the Mickey part was red. The second time was themed to like winter, so they were kind of a light blue. But I don't know. I was a little shocked that it was two different color balloons, I guess. So I didn't even notice the fact that one says Disneyland and the other one says Walt Disney World. And then I kind of had this weird thought. It was one of those, I'm like, did they mean to do that? Or did somebody not really pay attention? And oops, we meant to have whatever. But I feel like it probably was intentional, because now they don't have to have two different sets of ears to sell the two separate parts.
Are you saying that the assembler in the factory is like, this is supposed to have two pinks and this is supposed to have two purples? Wait a minute, we can put one of each and then bang.
Maybe it was a happy accident. I don't know. But they're interesting for sure. I don't know if it's something that I need to add to my collection, especially at the price point of $33. But
yeah. I just don't know why they had to put a resort name at all. Like, they could have just made it Mickey. You know what I mean?
Well, and the weird, can you go back to that? Because I don't think
the other ones had
resort names on them. I think they just had Mickey. Yeah, they just had Mickey on them. So I don't know. The replacement for the former Chadwick Boseman mural in Downtown Disney was unveiled this week. Imagineer Zhao Quinchen designed the new mural based on Raya and the Last Dragon, which, by the way, we saw in theaters this weekend.
In theaters.
Amazing. Amazing. Highly recommend it.
It was a great movie.
You know, and we did it wrong. We should have done Disney Plus, because we would have paid less if we would have done it through Disney Plus. But still, amazing. Very good movie. Hope you can all go see it and enjoy it. Back to the news story. Guests can take pictures in front of the new mural, which is located on the side of the former ESPN building. No word on how long the mural will be on display for.
Yeah, so again, I kind of wish that we would have been able to see personally the Chadwick Boseman one. I hope that it did look like it was on some type of like a canvas or something. So yeah. I hope it gets put somewhere else. But this one also looks very nice. And if they continue to have some artists create these, you know, I'll just say like a cultural kind of mural, I think it's good. I think it's cool. But there's plenty of space on that building. They could just put murals all over the place. I liked it. And again, like Teresa was saying, Raya and the Last Dragon was a very good movie. It was different than I honestly didn't know anything about it. But I thought it was pretty good. I'll tell you what, the animation in that movie of like the water looks real.
And the hair.
Oh,
like
the hair.
Whenever like you got the hair, like hair and fur was just so realistic. And I kept like having to remind myself in scenes in the beginning when Raya was with her father that's an animation. That's not actually like film of a person.
Yeah.
Like the skin and everything just looks so realistic. Mm-hmm. It was almost like creepy. It was so good.
The other thing about this movie that was great was the characters.
Yes.
They had a lot of likable characters.
Yes.
I just want to mention to the Disney fandom about this. Why does Pixar, I know this movie isn't Pixar, but stick with me here. Why does Pixar, when they put out a trailer for their movies, always have to be like, from the studio that brought you Toy Story? It's like everybody knows who Pixar is. You don't need to remind us that you brought us The Incredibles and Toy Story.
Well, okay, so I'm going to, I'll play devil's advocate on that. When I was younger, I honestly, I mean, you and I are big Disney people, so we know Pixar versus Disney. We know it's two separate studios. A lot of people don't know that. In fact, when I was younger and like Toy Story came out, I just knew Toy Story as a Disney movie. I didn't think of Pixar as its own separate thing. So I think a lot of people don't realize that it's separate, and so they're very proud that they're their, you know, that they're their own thing.
Okay.
Because even stuff like people will talk to me about, oh yeah, I'm going to Disney World. They've got the Jurassic Park ride there, right? You know, like
studio.
Yeah, they get the, you know, so people don't.
Yes, when I think of Disney, I think of man-eating dinosaurs.
That people get things kind of all like jumbled up in their brains. And same thing, like I said, so like we have all these Zoom calls, which I'm sure you all have Zoom calls all day, all the time. And one of the things I would joke, because people know I'm a huge Disney fan, so they'll say stuff like, all right, for our check-in today, what's everyone's favorite Disney movie? Or like, what Disney character do you identify with? Or, you know, whatever. And people,
I was like, is this you hosting this meeting?
No, people do it because they know I get a kick out of it. And then they laugh at me because I'm like, I can't choose. Anyway, so, but people will put stuff like, I don't know, like Anastasia, like as their favorite Disney princess.
Well, some movies are hard because what is it? There was A Bug's Life and what was the other? Ants?
Ants, yeah. A Bug's Life and Ants. So anyways.
But
so,
those
yeah.
came out, they're almost the same story. They came out around the same time, so
yeah,
people get confused.
Few of them.
Yeah.
But so people like, people think all the great like animated films must be Disney because that's what we're like. It's kind of like Kleenex. Everybody calls a facial tissue a Kleenex.
I'm also very impressed. Again, we're totally off topic here, but I'm very impressed that the Disney computer animation has like caught up to Pixar's animation, and they've been doing it like the whole time. Like Disney animation kind of went away for a while and they weren't doing computer animated stuff. So the fact that they've gotten things to look so good so quickly is just amazing. It just looks great.
So was that all podcasts?
I don't know. Disney has filed a patent for a new multimedia show system. The patent describes a system that could be used with elements in the space to cause the room to change and react to different items, basically transforming the room altogether. I didn't really understand.
I don't know, but that sounds just like, I've been trying to not use this word, but it's mind-boggling. This is just like, it hurts my head. How is this even like magic, Disney? How do you even make this happen? This is
well, how
crazy.
Do you even know what this is my question. Like, when you look at this graphic, what can you even tell what the thing is supposed to be
just
showing?
The fact that there's interactive elements that trigger different responses in a room. And it's the photo that they show is like somebody just sitting in like, I don't know, their bedroom or like the classroom or something. It's not like it's some immersive like ride system experience. It's just, it looks like normal, you know, like something in like your normal day to day. So there was speculation that is this something that maybe they're going to partner with Disney Plus, you know?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Now you can watch a movie on Disney Plus and be in the movie.
Yeah. And it was kind of like if you could like maybe do like play games or, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. It, of course, all speculation because all this was just a patent. That
doesn't even mean any of this will come to fruition.
It is very, very interesting to me, though, whenever these patents do kind of leak through, like Disney just released a patent or Disney just filed permits for this because that is so not my wheelhouse. I do not know anything about reading patents or permits or whatever. And so it's always so fun to like, oh, what do you think that is? And it was a couple weeks ago, we were all sorts of excited for scaffolding for the Jungle Cruise. Like it's just so fun.
Well, Alex brings up a good point in our chat. I'd love to watch WandaVision with this technology. Because then like,
and then your whole room could change to whatever decade your episode is.
That would be super cool.
That would be fun. Now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James is going to, we're not even going to say the word
he
try
He said it
anymore.
Was going to be hard tonight. So.
Yeah, we're not even going to say try. Where producer James will stump us with some Disney trivia. He will ask us four questions. We're going to try our best to answer. And then, of course, we will get the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
I mean, I do have some doozies for you, so you're not selling it short. But mostly blame the listeners, though I'm not helping much. All right, our first question comes from listener Lee S., and it's technically a three-parter.
Oh,
boy.
So, is this three questions or
three
what?
Three chances tag.
Yeah, we'll call it three questions in one.
Okay.
So question one, We are going to Teresa's favorite attraction.
Oh, no. These are always hard.
When did that Hatbox Ghost first appear in the Haunted Mansion?
When did he first appear?
First appear.
It was back when the attraction opened.
When he opened. Yeah, so 69.
Yeah, like even before it opened, like it was in like previews or
something. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there was, yeah, all the...
Because it got taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Because the effect wasn't working how they
mm-hmm,
wanted it to work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when did it open? 67?
69.
Nine? Okay, yeah, I'll say 1969. Or do you need more specific?
No, that is perfect.
Okay.
Whew. Question number two. Why was he removed from the attraction?
Oh.
Because it wasn't working the way they wanted it to.
Wow, apparently us just talking about it brought us
there. I would love to see this original animatronic. I'm sure it probably got taken apart and scrapped, but...
It might be in the Disney archive somewhere.
Maybe.
How do you think they recreated the new one? They had to have something to work off of.
Well, it's so the original Hatbox Ghost, like, there's photos.
What I'm saying, though, is that original
video
thing...
Of the original Hatbox Ghost, too, so...
Part three, when did the Hatbox Ghost return?
Ooh, when did he return? 2016 or 17?
17, maybe, I would say.
All right, along with that one, Lee was curious about some of your takes on it. Of why do you think the Hatbox Ghost is so popular, and did that cult following-like popularity inspire Disney to restore him?
Yeah, so I think that... I think Hatbox Ghost for a while... was one of those things that people weren't certain was ever actually there.
Well, and the cool thing about him, too, was
so it was kind of like a, what's the word
he was
looking
like
for?
Mysterious.
Well, it was kind of like an urban legend. Like, yeah. Was it ever actually there?
The thing I think that's interesting, too, with the Hatbox Ghost is that he showed up in all sorts of different, like, merchandise and events, and he was always kind of there, but you didn't really know anything about him. In fact, you have like he's in like the wallpaper or not the wallpaper he's in some of the portraits in the hallway with all the doors and all, so he's just kind of, I don't know, he's like extra creepy because he's there but not.
And yes, I think that the enthusiasm of the community around the Hatbox Ghost made the Imagineers kind of think like, you know, the technology wasn't there to make this work. We have plenty of cool technology now. We should bring it back.
You know, what's crazy too, to think is where he sits in the attraction,
like outside the attic,
but there was nothing there. Like he had like there's even the perfect little space for him to be. So it was like, he always, was
what was there before? Nothing,
nothing. There was just like, I don't know, some props or whatever, but nothing like, maybe like a bush or I don't know. Like, I don't remember, but that's the thing. I don't even remember what was there, but it was really weird going on Walt Disney World's version because, of course, they don't have the Hatbox Ghost. So coming around that corner and like knowing where he should be and having him not there was really like jarring. I was like, oh. There, does that sum it up, what it is about the Hatbox Ghost? We just like gushed.
I think that gave us a lot of insight. Moving on. Question number two comes from listener Melissa S. There are 14 churro carts in Disneyland and DCA. Oh. Which lands do not have one?
Which lands don't have what? Churro cart?
A churro cart.
Lands?
Adventureland.
Which lands? Yes.
Okay.
Adventureland doesn't have a churro cart.
Nope. No churro cart in Adventureland.
No churro cart in New Orleans Square.
There's one like across the street from the Haunted Mansion. So I don't.
Is that Frontierland or is that New Orleans Square? See, it's tough how the like line goes there.
Yeah.
Galaxy's Edge does not have churros either.
I'm going to say New Orleans Square has one.
Okay.
Critter Country. Do they have one? I can't think of one.
I don't think so.
Critter
Country. They just have the poo.
Okay. So.
Candy shop.
So. No, there is one in Frontierland. I've had one in Frontierland.
I didn't say Frontierland.
Oh, you said Adventureland. Sorry.
Yeah.
So Adventureland does not have one.
Galaxy's
Critter
Edge.
Country does not have one. Galaxy's Edge does not have one. Toontown?
I don't think Toontown has one.
I don't think Toontown does either. How many?
I don't think Toontown even has an outdoor vending cart, do they?
There are 14 carts in the park.
So we don't know how many. Okay.
Not going to give you that one.
Toontown does not have one. Fantasyland has got to have one because there's like the one in front of the castle that probably comes.
Well, I think there's also one down by It's a Small World. There's a couple carts down in that area.
Tomorrowland has one.
Yeah. Main Street definitely has one.
Well, does the Hub count as Main Street?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we said, to reiterate, because we're saying all these things, Critter Country, Galaxy's Edge, Adventureland, Toontown.
Are we doing Disneyland?
Nope, California Adventure as well. I don't know California Adventure as well.
I know that they sell one in the
Grizzly Peak area.
No, where's the? Why am I blanking?
There was one in Bugs Land, so I'm going to assume there will be one in Avengers campus. There's definitely one on like Buena Vista Street.
Yeah.
Is there one in the Wharf? I don't think there's one on the Wharf.
I don't think there's one on the Wharf.
Is there one on? There's got to be one on Pixar Pier.
Maybe.
There's got to be.
I don't remember one because they've got the chicken and they've got the frosted treats and they've got the cookie nom noms.
They have a line like across the lagoon. Hmm. And I'm pretty sure there's a churro cart there.
Hmm. What I mean is where Grizzly River Run is, mm-hmm. there is a churro cart in there because I've purchased one from that cart before.
So we'll say, I don't think there's one on the Wharf.
Oh, Cedar Buzz Churro, that's right.
I don't think there's one on the Wharf.
I don't think there's one on the Wharf either. Do they sell churros in Cars Land? Because they have the chili con carne and other stuff.
The three cones.
I don't think that there's a churro in there.
That'll probably be... there's churros all over the place in DCA, not that I'm learning.
Anyway.
Let's go, with those two. Cars Land. Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I feel like there's one of the cones does, but I've never visited the cones. We'll have to visit the cones during Touch of Disney.
We won't, because we're not going to buy anything there, because all the other food's everywhere else. Or do they have some special food in the cones?
Yeah, food in the cones.
What's in the cones that we wanted to eat?
I don't know, but I just want to go to the cones. I've never been to the cones.
Senior Buzz is my favorite Buzz. Yeah, right, Tara?
So is it Pacific Wharf's the only one we've got?
The Grizzly Peak Airfield might also not have one.
Oh,
was there one outside of Soarin'?
Yes, I think there is. There's like Willy's Churro Cart right over
there. Okay.
Well, we're just going to say...
That's what we're going to say.
Pacific Wharf area does not have one.
Are we close at least, James?
I don't even know. Sure. I'm very bad at the lands in DC. I'm going to just say that right now. Because maybe there's other areas that have different lands.
Maybe. But let's move on. Our third question, and this was a joy for me to stumble on.
I thought the first one was three.
Yeah, the first one was three parts.
Oh,
three parts.
Okay.
Yeah. This one was a joy for me to stumble on. So the Jungle Cruise was used in an advertisement featuring Ed Sullivan.
Oh.
What product was he promoting?
Oh, boy. I have absolutely no idea.
I want to say something stupid like soap or something.
Well, but why would it be what would be jungle themed? I was thinking, well, okay, I shouldn't be making fun of you because the first thing that came to my mind was like razors. I don't know why, but razors was the first thing that came to my mind.
And you were making fun of me for soap? That's
I know. We're terrible guesses. I think Karina in the chat has the best guess, and she said Kodak. I could see something like cameras or film or something like that.
Yeah. But
I don't know. Maybe we should stick with our soap and razors. I'm trying to
some type of like travel company or something.
Travel company. That's not a bad idea.
Like an airline, maybe?
Or like luggage.
Mm.
Or maybe, nice jungle attire and like safari
khakis.
Wear and like the hats, adventure gear.
Anyway, let's move on from this one.
All right, our last question this week from listener Ace. And I thought this one was super relevant for the time since a lot of people have picked up new hobbies in quarantine. In the Boat and Bakery walkthrough in California Adventure, you can learn a lot about the sourdough. For example, what are the ingredients in Boat and Sourdough?
It's real simple.
Starter.
Yeah, it's like the sourdough starter,
flour,
water.
Water, yeah.
I think that's it. Maybe some salt?
sugar. I've never made sourdough.
I've never made sourdough either, but sourdough doesn't have sweetness to it.
I don't think you need yeast because that's part from of the starter.
Yeah.
Flour, water, starter. We'll leave it at that.
I think it's very easy like that.
Very good. We'll see if your recipe comes up right after this week's discussion topic.
This week for our discussion topic, we are continuing our interview with former cast member Dave Smith. So please enjoy the rest of the interview where we talk about the monorail. So enjoy.
So right in the time that you worked there, we were talking about this before we started our interview, and we were kind of talking about how you kind of get away with things more so when you were there than you could now. So what kind of cool things, or did you go exploring in Pirates, or what kind of fun adventures did you have there?
Grad nights were kind of cool because the West Side would go dead.
Really?
Because all the teenagers would go dance in Tomorrowland.
Sure.
And by 2 or 3 in the morning, they were either passed out on a bench or dancing the night away over on Tomorrowland Terrace or wherever. And so we would get people, we'd get one couple on a boat and then 3 or 4 empty boats. And I remember Terry, one of our leads, he had this old Mickey Mouse doll and he would hide it in the ride.
Yeah.
And when you got on your break, you had to try to find it. And it was really cool because he'd hide. One day I don't know how he did this. He put it on top of the talking skull right before the down drop.
Yeah.
How he got that Mickey Mouse doll up there, I have no idea. But no, that was kind of fun. You couldn't do that today. We'd go down on Pirates. I'm not kidding you. We'd have a lot of breaks. So a couple of us would go down to the jail scene, hop across the boats and get behind the jails and act like the audio animatronic jail guys going here, doggy, doggy, here, puppy, puppy, you know, and we'd move like a robot, you know, and the boats would be coming by, people would be taking pictures. They didn't know. They thought we were part of the attraction. And then we'd go, oh, break's over. And they're like, they're real.
You never know. Just, you just never know. That's so funny.
I don't think they can do that today, but I mean, it was rather fun. And, it was done in a good spirit. But yeah, we'd snuck into when the construction of Big Thunder Mountain was going on, we'd sneak in there. And it was so easy. There wasn't the security in the in the early 80s like we have today. So I can remember a friend of mine, Rob, and I got off work and went back into the park, and we weren't even in costume. And we just went back in the construction area and went through part of the ride. And I mean, it was dangerous. I mean, there was girders and beams and the track. And we didn't stay there long because it was so eerie, but it was cool to just experience that, prior to the finishing touches, I guess you could say.
Right. That would be pretty neat.
Yeah. What a cool experience to be able to check out the bones of what is now one of the iconic attractions there. I mean, that's awesome.
And then a lot of us got to ride it when they were testing the ride. They would, all of us, when we had a break, and usually on our lunch, we have a 35 minute break. They'd say, okay, come on down to Big Thunder, because they were testing the ride, and we'd get to ride it 4 or 5 times and then go back to our attraction.
That'd be so
fun. Which was really kind of cool. I think the guests got angry as heck. They're like, why did they get to ride
it? Like, wait a minute.
Now, did you get to meet Tony Baxter?
I met Tony at a D23 event. Mm. I was actually introduced to him by, who was I with? But, Tony and Dave Smith, the archivist we've talked about, I've met several times before he passed away. There were some of the good Imagineers that were just so fun to talk to. Raleigh Crump. I can't remember all the different names of some of the old timers that were there that have incredible memories, far more than I ever could have, but pretty cool, pretty special to meet some of those people who were so instrumental in ride designs or theming or ideas. Yeah, right. Very cool.
So did you confess to him that you, I guess it wasn't really sneaking, but that you got to go kind of check out Big Thunder as a construction site?
I didn't mention it. This is the first time I've ever mentioned it because I think the statute of limitations has probably expired where they can't come back and go, you trespass.
Well, they'd have to prove it, right?
That's true.
Yeah, I was never there.
Yeah, right. I don't know what you're talking about.
Do you have the camera footage?
Yeah. Okay, now we've got to get to this because I will kick myself if we don't get to this.
Patiently waiting.
One of my dream jobs is to pilot the monorail, and you got to do that. So what was how did you get chosen to do this?
Take a deep breath.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How did you get chosen to do this? And then what was the training like for that?
When I quit the park in 84, I kind of missed it.
Sure.
And so I rehired in 85 or I quit in 83 and rehired in 84. And again, I thought I was going to get hired back in canoes or whatever, what I was already trained on. So I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised that they said, hey, we have an opening on monorail. I was like, oh, you know, get to drive the most expensive vehicle in the park, get to go to the hotel and do all that. It wasn't near as fun as I thought it would be. I hate to be a Debbie Downer here, but it was very mechanical, and working Tomorrowland after working the West Side was very cold, very concrete and cold.
Sure.
And the people working in the West Side or the Tomorrowland area were different, not in a bad way, just different. So I was, you know, having spent 5 years in West Side, it was a shock. And of course, as I mentioned, my dad passed away, my grandma passed away, my grandpa passed away all in the same year. So I think that probably had more to do with it than anything. But driving the monorail was not only fun and very prestigious and very cool to be up in the bubble, because back then we had the bubble. Old Mark IVs had the bubble where you had two guests could sit up there and then you had the driver's seat. And you had a T-bar on your left side with what's called a dead man disengage, which meant if you were in P4, which is the fastest speed it could go, and you died, if your hand fell off the T-bar, it would come to a stop. So the goal was not to have a runaway train, so to speak.
Yeah.
But you also had you had a button that would run the recorded spiel at different parts that you had to hit and pay attention. And then if you were coming towards the hotel or leaving the hotel, you had to get on the microphone and talk to the whole train and say, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to remind you that Disneyland is open till midnight tonight. If you do plan to leave the park at any time, please remember to get your hand stamped. And thank you very much for visiting Disneyland.
Where are we?
And you'd hear all the people laughing in the back, and you get two people that would sit up front. They were just in hog heaven because they're up in the bubble. They have a perfect 365 degree view of everywhere you're going. Mm-hmm. The coolest thing was not at Disneyland, but I got married in 1987. My wife and I went, of course, to Disney World on our honeymoon. We did a cruise, which before the Disneyland Cruise Line, they had a different company that did a cruise. And then we did Disney World. And so we get in the front of the monorail, and those were the Mark VIIs, which had the driver in a kind of a Captain Kirk kind of Star Trek seat with everything was right in the front of the thing. And of course, this is 87, so there's still not a lot of security.
Yeah.
And I started talking to the guy. And I said, yeah, I drove the monorail at Disneyland. He goes, you did? Yeah. I said, you want to drive? I said, yeah. So he let me drive the monorail there from the TTC to the Contemporary Hotel.
Wow.
And it was just, I mean, my wife was just like, you got to drive the monorail. But monorails actually go about 60 miles an hour. The Disneyland monorails only go top speed 32 miles per hour, 33 if you're really getting a little tailwind, but they could go faster, but they were governed back. Mm-hmm. It was such a short track.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the problem with the monorails, the Mark IVs were old. They were some of the original, you know, the Mark IIIs and Mark IVs were the newer, but they weren't like the sevens today and the Mark VIIIs. So the red one had a history of, there was what was called the grade. And that was the up incline before you came around the submarine lagoon.
Oh, okay.
And you had this incline. And if you didn't drop down to P1 or P2 and tried to make it in P3 or P4, it would stall. It would die. And if it died, you had to get on the walkie-talkie, which went park-wide, and say, this is Monroe Red. We did not make the grade. And they had to stop all the monorails.
Yeah.
And you had to back up.
Oh my God.
Far enough that you could get a running start to try to make it back up to grade. And it was embarrassing because you would come in the station and all the ride operators had their arms crossed at their chest going, shaking their head going, you idiot.
So it's like the little engine that could.
That's right. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting, but no, it was a lot of fun. That was very cool.
I could see how that'd be very different because, right, you were in an area that was very, like, you were with the people. You were there with the guests and you were part of the entertainment. And then you suddenly are kind of just in your own little bubble.
Yeah, you're just driving a spaceship, sort of speaking. Yeah.
So I could see how that would be much different.
But you got to talk, I mean, if you were on the platform, either at the hotel, because your rotation, you would drive, you would do ticket taking at the hotel, you would do loading at the hotel, you would drive, you would do platform at Tomorrowland and then rotate to a break. And so you would spend time, you get to stand and chat with people while they're waiting for the monorail. Where are you from? You know, and just, you know, it was kind of fun because, you know, the Disneyland Hotel had what was called the Dancing Waters.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people never knew about it because it was tucked way back in the corner of the resort.
I loved it.
I did too. And we would go all the time. And it was a fun show and it was free. So it was a cheap date.
Yeah.
You know, but the idea was that I would talk to people and go, hey, if you're not doing anything and you're looking for something cool to do, go to the Disneyland Hotel and check out the Dancing Waters. And numerous times people would come the next day because they were there for 2, 3, 4 days. They go, thank you for telling us about that. We would never have seen that. And that was kind of cool to know that you were able to give them something, you know, as Walt Disney would say, plus the show, and give them something more than they anticipated. So it was a lot of fun.
You know, back in the day, there was actually quite a bit of stuff at the Disneyland Hotel that I feel like is actually more interesting than what is at the Disneyland Hotel now, because they used to have that whole like section with waterfalls and stuff that you could go around.
Horseshoe, yeah.
Beautiful. They had the lagoon where you could drive these motorized Jungle Cruise boats around. They had the Fantasy Waters thing back there. Yep. I mean, I remember one time I went with our family friend. He was there on a business trip and I went with him, and we didn't go to Disneyland because, you know, whatever, but we went and wandered around the Disneyland Hotel and we watched the Fantasy Water show and we hung around all the different things. We went in the little shops and stuff. And I remember thinking that was just so cool. And then we went back. I think the first time I've been back for a long time that actually like kind of wandered around the whole property was when we went for D23. And I just remember going like, there's really not much here anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. The waterfalls were a real safety hazard because everything was wet and the walkways were wet and
it was cool though.
It was, like you said, they had the horseshoe falls that changed color and they had the kind of like a Pier 1 kind of shopping area on these planks. And of course you had the top of the park bar, which a lot of people don't know about.
I didn't know about that.
The old hotel, the original Disneyland Hotel, had a bar called the top of the park. At the very top, and you could watch the fireworks from up there and have a beer or drink or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was, it's still there as far as I know. And, but the ballrooms, I mean, it was always kind of cool because if we were bored one night, we'd just drive down to Disneyland Hotel and just like you were just saying, just walk around, just meet people. And you go into these big ballrooms, if there was nothing going on, you're the only one in this huge room. And it was just, had a magical feel, and just, I look back on it with great affection. in terms of doing things that you can probably hear in my voice, how much fun that it was to be growing up in that environment.
For sure. So any antics that you got into with the monorail? Do you, I don't know.
What you always wanted all these antics and fun things. Like, I feel like a bunch of questions that I'm like, you're really on this like antic thing, aren't you?
You're such a deviant.
I feel like there was just like, so many cool, like, interesting things you could do back then.
Yeah.
Like, go check out the building of the Big Thunder Mountain, you know, yeah. Like. So, yeah.
Trish, like, you sound like a fun guy. You must have had some fun.
It was fun working with, number one, obviously people who were hired there were pretty outgoing and pretty fun to be around, and they enjoyed their job. And, of course, you can also look at all the things that we did away from Disneyland, as we had softball, huge softball teams, huge number of them. The canoe races we talked about. Yeah. You had... basically during the summer, there was a party you could go to every night. I can remember Welcome Back Skylab. If you remember the space station Skylab that was put up in the early 70s, and it wasn't in the right orbit and it was defunct. And so it was falling back to Earth. And they made a big deal. This was about 82, 83, somewhere in that. And so somebody threw a party called Welcome Back Skylab, and the dance floor had a giant target. And the Skylab actually burned up over Australia, and parts of it landed in Australia. But everyone was worried. They didn't know really where this huge, space station that was built prior to the new one, the International Space Station, would land. And so that was every party that Disneyland cast members threw always were kind of themed. There was a huge party called the Banana Bowl.
The Banana Bowl.
The Banana Bowl was at the Orange County Fairgrounds. And it started as a Jungle Cruise end of summer party. It grew and grew. Finally, it got so big, they held it at the fairgrounds. And it was, and I remember my last year at the Banana Bowl, the Jungle Cruise guys made a film called Mr. Bill Goes to Disneyland. And if you remember the Saturday Night Live character, Mr. Bill was this figure, and he was always getting in trouble on Saturday Night Live. And so the Jungle Cruise guys had this Mr. Bill, and they brought him through all these, they had him on the Skyway, the old Skyway. And they said, "Oh, look, Mr. Bill, look at the view." And they pushed him over the edge.
Oh, no. Falls,
and you hear him going, "Oh, no." And then they go to the submarine, looking out the submarine portal, and you see Mr. Bill floating down, and bubbles go. Just really creative stuff. In fact, Alice in Wonderland got suspended because Mr. Bill, they put him in the middle of the afternoon parade.
Oh,
and you could see the guys on the film going, kick him, kick Mr. Bill. And she's skipping down, and she kicks Mr. Bill down Main Street, which is this 6-inch play figure.
Yeah.
But yeah, she got a little trouble.
too funny. So did you get any sort of how do I want to say this? Were there any sort of things that you kind of kept to as reminders or mementos of your time working at the parks?
I have stuff.
You have stuff.
I'm only going to say I have stuff that not too many people have.
Oh.
And I'm not going to say because that, I don't know if I could get in trouble.
Yeah.
No, totally fine. I was thinking pins or that you were given.
I have much bigger stuff than pins.
Got it. We'll leave it at that.
There you go. No, I don't have a keelboat. I didn't steal the keelboat.
Hey, they don't have them anymore either. I know. One in my garage.
Yeah, that's why I have them. You know that one of the keelboats was auctioned off on eBay.
Really?
And a guy in LA bought it for $15,000.
I wonder what you would do. What would you do with a keelboat?
There's some people that buy all types of stuff like that. They just got it laying around, or they have it in their backyard. People do weird things, but sometimes, I'm sure he has a good reason for it. I mean, you got what's his name? who's got the Disneyland sign. John Stamos, who is part of the Disneyland sign.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. That's pretty cool, though. That's pretty iconic.
I mean, if I could afford it, I'd buy something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the old Utopia cars, there's people that own the old original Corvette-looking Utopia cars. And then, but the interesting thing, when you get hired to work there, it was a four-day training. You did Disney University, which you learned all about Walt, learn about the Disney way and all this stuff. Then they give you a full tour of the backstage areas. So back where behind what is now Galaxy's Edge are all the warehouses that they keep everything. They never really throw anything away. So there were things like old Jungle Cruise animals and just tons of things. And of course they have one big one when they have the electrical parade where they kept all the electrical parade floats. Mm-hmm. And it's also where they shoot off the fireworks. So you got to see the mortar shell holders mm-hmm. that are all electrically computerized and whatnot. But that's very cool. One year when I was working there, I think it was the 25th anniversary, they had several family nights for just cast members and their families.
Oh, fun.
And they closed the park. And we were allowed to bring our guests, our family, or friends. And they had all the attractions open, like they had Space Mountain with the lights on. And that you could see the train. They had the train, one car going. And the back under certain parts of Pirates of the Caribbean. And the filming area of America Sing, America the Beautiful, the Circle Vision.
Yeah.
And backstage, they took trams to the back area. And it was impressed. I took my parents and I had a girlfriend that I took, and they were in awe just to see things that nobody, unless you work there, get to see.
Right, right.
And so that was one of the really neat things when I worked there that Disney did to thank us, to be able for us to do something for our friends and family. And that was a big highlight.
So not only do we need a teleporter, we also need a time machine. Go back, work at the parks or get hired on the parks around that time. Make sure that we could do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we need.
I was still thinking about the big warehouse you were talking about, Dave, that just had like all the stuff in it and how I would probably just spend. I'd get fired because I'd be in the warehouse too long looking at all the stuff.
And there is another area that most people don't know about. In fact, a lot of cast members don't know about. There's an administration, and I don't know if it's still there.
Sure.
But when I worked there, the administration building had this long hallway. And along the wall, they had these plexiglass collages of every year at the park.
Oh,
every year.
Yeah.
From 55 to the current year at that mm-hmm. time. And you could spend hours. It was like a museum to see these pictures, and it was so well done of the park's growth and change and evolution. So definitely, I hope it's still around. I hope they still have it somewhere down there in the administration. It's down by where the Disney jail is. And yes, there is a Disney jail. And no, I've never been.
I was gonna say, how do you know about this? No. Wow. Yeah, that sounds cool. Hopefully that does exist somewhere and that they've kept that tradition on. That'd be super cool.
We've covered so much, and I feel like I probably could talk to you for days just about everything. But
was there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about or share?
Well, I would definitely talk a little bit. I mean, the incentive for my first five Hidden Mickey books was really from my era of working there and my love of Disney's history and his. I've got about 100 books on Disney, trivia books and whatnot, in addition to my own. And it's really cool to marry that history. So Club 33, are you guys familiar with Club 33?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Not intimately familiar, but we are aware of it.
Yes.
I've gotten to eat there twice. And both were magical. Both were, I thank my lucky stars that I was able to do that. And luckily I knew the right people. I certainly didn't earn it myself, but the idea was that to go up there where Walt's apartment was going to be. Mm-hmm. And if there's any trivia you want to know, I do have quite a bit of trivia in my head here, but you know, when Walt had his original apartment on Main Street, which is still there, still furnished exactly the same way. In fact, the Hidden Mickey one, the first book, there is what's called the Mouse Adventure Road Rally, which is actually an event they do twice a year. I don't know when they'll start it up again, but it's actually like a scavenger hunt in the park. And Nancy really wanted to bring the element of Walt's apartment. And so in the fictional story, we part of the treasure or the part of the scavenger hunt, they had to go up to Walt's apartment, and they find something there that's been hidden there for, you know, 40 years. And so that sets off this chain of following clues that Walt Disney left behind, fictionally, of course. But, you know, that then he wanted a bigger apartment, and he wanted a very special restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so if you look above Pirates of the Caribbean slightly to the right, where the French Market is, you'll see the railing has W, D, and R, D. Mm-hmm. And that's for Walt Disney and Roy Disney. And they had their, originally was going to be their two apartments up there. And that, and then Club 33 was what Walt was originally showing his very important people, VIPs, would take him to lunch behind the other Disneyland employee cafeteria, which was on Main Street, off of Main Street, called the In-Between. Mm-hmm. And he didn't like, it wasn't fancy enough. So that was the reason for Club 33, was to have this very ornate restaurant. And originally Walt wanted to have microphones in the chandeliers. You may have read about this. Mm-hmm. And if you eat there, they are still there.
Yeah.
And Walt did it because he wanted, if the person said, gosh, I'd love to have a bottle of ketchup, the waiter would immediately bring it in before they even asked for it.
Yeah.
And the also the other goal was to have kind of a interactive audio animatronic birds like the Tiki Room. This was before Tiki Room. Well, actually, Tiki Room was there, but Tiki Room was originally going to be a dinner show. Mm-hmm. And they figured it would be impossible because people eat at different speeds and blah, blah, blah. So they just made it what it is today. But originally, Club 33 was also going to have interactive birds and animals that were audio animatronic that would interact with the guests and talk to them. And I think that was another reason why they had the microphones, so that
they could hear what
they were saying. So, but the microphones are still hanging in the center of the chandelier, and they've kept them there. And so Club 33, we wanted to bring in an old-time character in the book who knew some history when they're stuck on a clue in one of the Hidden Mickey books. And so that was the kind of the goal of bringing. We wanted people to understand Club 33, if you don't know where the entrance is, it's just to the right of the Blue Bayou entrance, mm-hmm. the restaurant. And there's one more set of doors, just like the Blue Bayou doors, that are really nondescript, but there's a oval mirror that says 33. And there's a place where you put a credit card type of thing to, and they'll say, name of your party, please. And if you stand there long enough, you'll probably see some celebrities go in there.
Yeah.
But when you walk in, it's a very ornate lobby. And then there's a gold-plated glass elevator that takes you up to the second floor. There's also a stairway that goes around that elevator shaft. It's not very tall. It's only one story. But then you come out, and it's just got a lot of Walt's furniture, memorabilia, very classy, very ornate. Place to eat, and you're looking out over, if you get lucky and get a table by the front where the windows are that overlook New Orleans Square and Thompson Island.
That'd be amazing.
So we wanted, when we wrote Hidden Mickey, both Nancy and I wanted to include things that people may have heard about, because people oftentimes hear about Club 33. What is it? Mm-hmm. They see a door. There's a door on Main Street, which is there's a porch with a couple chairs on it.
Yeah.
And there's a door that's locked. That used to be a building called the Wizard of Bras, which was an intimate apparel store.
Yeah.
back in the mid 50s when the park opened. And now it's nothing's there. Well, it's actually part of the gift shops that run behind there. But that door opens up to a very special place. And at the end of Hidden Mickey 2 and in the Hidden Mickey 5, that door comes into very particular usage.
You are so, getting me so excited to read these books.
So, well, good. We hope millions of others will too.
So can you give just a brief overview of kind of like, if someone hasn't read these books, kind of like what these books are about and just kind of like what to expect if you were to pick
one
up?
That's a great intro to helping us tell a story a little bit. In a nutshell, it's sort of Da Vinci Code meets National Treasure. So you can think it's all really authentic historical things dealing with Walt Disney and his past with a fictional treasure hunt that he allegedly left behind to preserve his legacy.
It's not his frozen corpse, is it?
Oh, no.
I'm not going to get into any urban legend.
He's not going to give
us any spoilers. Oh. I'm just saying people always think that, you know, Walt's frozen somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. We wrote Hidden Mickey 1. Nancy and I finally saw each other for the first time when we did a book signing in her hometown in Modesto, where George Lucas grew up.
Oh, yeah. Ireland.
And she came down to do a book signing at a Barnes & Noble down here in Utah, where I live, in southern Utah, in St. George. And we were sitting at my desk. And I said, we hadn't even thought about Hidden Mickey 2. But Hidden Mickey 1 has a cliffhanger ending.
Sure.
And so we knew kind of what we wanted to do, but we hadn't come up with any storyline. I said, hey, I got an idea. So I type up 4 pages in about 10 minutes. And I said, read this. And she's reading it and she's just bawling. And I'm like, pretty good ending, huh? And so she's like, this will be the end of book 2. So I will leave it at that, that there's a very emotional, happy ending to book 2. Book 3 and 4, she wrote. They're not completely different. There is a character from book 2 that she carried into books 3 and 4. And while she was writing those, I had read this brief paragraph description in David Koenig's book, Reality Land, about Disney World. Mm-hmm. And all it said was one of the cast members stole a lot of money and it was never, ever found. It was never recovered. And I'm like, oh, imagine if somebody stole a lot of money and hid it at Disneyland, because there's places in Disneyland that really haven't been touched since the park opened. Mm-hmm. Now that they built the Galaxy's Edge, that area hadn't been touched. I mean, it was a jungle. There were some paths back there, but it was a jungle. So I thought to myself, how cool would it be to have someone hide something, I won't say in plain sight, but in somewhere where people have passed by it many, many times, and it's been sitting there for decades. And so that was the inspiration for Hidden Mickey 5. And it had a great love story because it sort of patterned. I met a young lady who worked at Disneyland who was an exchange student from Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And so I created this character kind of based on her personality, but she was an international pop star who just sold out the Hollywood Bowl. And she and her sister decide, they're interviewed by the LA Times and they say, hey, Malaysia Hosner, you just sold out the Hollywood Bowl. What are you going to do next? and she goes, well, just between you and me, I'm going to Disneyland. And so she meets this guy who works there. They find a clue to the stolen money. And they're now on this treasure hunt to find more of where it could be hidden. And they're also, he doesn't know that she colors her hair and goes incognito and doesn't know who she is.
Oh,
gotcha.
And she doesn't know. Eventually, later in the book, he figures it out. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't tell her he knows who she is. So she's an international pop star at Disneyland, having a great time with this young, charismatic cast member on this treasure hunt. And she's having to lie through her teeth about, you know, because she has a rehearsal at the Forum. She has a rehearsal at where the Mighty Ducks played down at the Honda Center. It's called the Honda Center. It was then. And so she's having to make up all these lies because she has to do this with her band. And he plays in a band. And he invites her and her sister to come here as band at this nightclub with a bunch of cast members that have this band. And needless to say, they say, hey, we're doing the song by Malaysia Hosner from Switzerland. And of course, she's in the audience. Yeah. And he doesn't know it's her. So anyway, you kind of get the idea that there's a lot of fun of the texture of the relationship and then the discovery of both his treasure. How does he find out who she is? How does he let her know? Mm-hmm. Is there a relationship? Is it going to grow? Is it impossible? So yeah, the Hidden Mickey books are just treasure hunts and based on Walt and a lot of historical places in his past. Two best friends in the first two books basically are on this hunt to follow clues.
I'm very excited to read this now.
So have there been any kind of like weird things that have happened because you wrote these books?
The coolest thing was Jerry Bruckheimer had his main, if you know Jerry, he was the producer of Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Mm-hmm. He produced Deja Vu.
All the CSI stuff, didn't he?
Huge, yeah. CSI, he's big time. And I got a call from a guy named Todd Simovich, which is his main screenplay writer. He said, "Jerry wants your books." I think we had the first two books at that time. And I called Nancy and I said, guess who wants our books? And she's like, I said, Jerry Bruckheimer. And nothing's ever come about from it. Whether you just didn't find him able to turn him into a movie, but
still, though, we were pretty excited. Amazing.
Yeah.
And, I'd watch a movie that was like a National Treasure, Da Vinci Code filmed at Disneyland kind of thing.
I mean, most of it could be done in a sound studio. Mm-hmm. I mean, you wouldn't have to, because most of the book, there are a few places where they're going through parts of Disneyland, but they're not part of the story. You could change the writing of it.
Sure.
And the, I did use a little creative artistic, creativity in that, there's a big chase scene in book one, and I had to create a vehicle for them to get out of the park differently than exists. So there is one fictional location, but for the most part, everything in the books very much based on true locations, places of Walt. So, I mean, some of the places are Marceline, Missouri, where Walt grew up, Kansas City, where he had his first animation studio. One of the really exotic places was Trinidad and Tobago. And Nancy created a great character for that scene in the book that speaks this really cool tongue, kind of a Jamaican-like sounding, because that's where Walt Disney filmed Swiss Family Robinson, the old movie about the treehouse. And we wanted to have a clue, a really cool clue there. And so these guys, we had to have two guys that were old enough and wealthy enough. One of them was a trust fund brat who had tons of money, and his buddy is a contractor and doesn't have much money. And so they're on this traveling to Trinidad and Tobago in the Caribbean, and traveling to Kansas, and traveling to Marceline, and back to Burbank, and all these places that you guys would love because they are based on places that you've heard about.
I cannot wait to read these.
I'm excited. Now I think maybe tonight before bed, maybe I'll start reading. Because it's sitting on my desk at home. Mm-hmm. I just, like I said, I've been so busy with school and stuff that it's been hard. We actually have some podcast stuff we want to get through and just haven't had time.
I hear you, and I don't blame you at all. I mean, I've got a dozen books that I'm still on my list of reading, but I hope you'll enjoy it. It's a very affectionate look at Walt and Disneyland, and with a cute love story in each of the books, a very G-rated love story.
Awesome.
But I thank you first and foremost for wanting to read them, and I hope maybe.
Well, you've sold them well.
Yes.
Well, if you ever want me back, we can talk about your impressions of.
Hidden Mickey.
We should an author roundtable. We've had like three or four authors on now. We should just get everybody together and talk about writing about Disney.
Do you know? So, we have like the Da Vinci Code-esque feel going on with your books, and they were obviously popular with people. So, do you know? Has anyone tried to find the hidden treasure or find any of these clues that were mentioned in your books?
A couple funny stories. First of all, the books have certain attractions that are mainly featured in the book. So if you look at the first book, you'll notice that there's an, I don't know which cover you have. We have a hardback and a softback. The softback has a pirate map. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of figure out which ride it features.
So that must be the Country Bear Jamboree.
Space Mountain.
we'll work on colors and numbers next week. But the second book has a jungle map, like you're going through a jungle. So you can probably guess what ride is featured as a prominent part of the book. The fifth book that I wrote, Hidden Mickey 5, Chasing New Frontiers, is got Mark Twain and fireworks, which has a key part in the book. Let me just say that there's a scene on Pirates of the Caribbean that you may be familiar with. It's at the end of the attraction where there's a jail scene. And there's a dog holding a key. And there's pirates in the jail trying to get the dog to bring them the key to get out of the jail. And they've got a rope and a bone, and they're here, puppy, you know, as I mentioned earlier. So we thought it would be really fun to make that key, because everyone in the world who's been on Pirates of the Caribbean is familiar with that scene, if not any other scene. Maybe
the
treasure scene, I don't know. But so Nancy and I decided to make that key open something of importance that they have to figure out where the key is and figure out what the key opens in the book. And so a friend of mine who works in the park has mentioned several times to me, I find it very flattering. He finds it very annoying that key has been stolen several times since we wrote Hidden Mickey 1.
And
so ironically, from what he told me, they finally had to weld the key in the dog's mouth, which is an audio animatronic dog, that people couldn't yank it out of his mouth anymore. Whether it was a cast member or somebody got out of a boat, I don't know. But he said, ever since you wrote that, we've had to replace it. So I'm like, cool.
I think,
but yeah, I mean, that's probably, you know, as far as somebody doing something relative to the boat.
That's so funny. I'm trying to imagine somebody trying to like quick hop out of their boat and like grab the key and hop back in their boat.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the boats get backed up that section before they could do the up ramp. So if any part of the attraction had probably a little bit of time to do something nefarious, that would be it.
I've been stuck in that section for a while before.
Too long.
Yeah. So to wrap things up, we got one final question. This is going to be really interesting for me, I think, because we've gone in so many different directions with where you've worked. But if you could work at Disneyland again, what would you do? So the sky's the limit. This could be a real job, fake job. What would you do?
Great question. I would say I would probably love to go back to my roots of the canoe ride.
Yeah.
I've told my wife, I said, you know, heaven forbid if anything happened to my family and I had no family left, I would probably find myself venturing back and applying to Disneyland in some capacity. And whether I'm too old to work on the canoe ride, you know,
keep paddling, guys. Yeah, fine.
You guys need to paddle harder because I need to go on a break. But I would say I would love to work anywhere on the West Side. Pirates is fun. Mm-hmm. I never worked Haunted Mansion, which probably has its own set of cool. I've heard a lot of stories I'm not going to share today. We may do it for another time.
There you go.
you know, that would be fun. I kind of have a feeling, though, that I'd be a little disillusioned with the fact that I had it so good.
Oh, sure.
When I worked there, that I just wonder if my hands would be so tied, I'd feel constricted in having a good time. But it was fun because of the people. And the cool thing about Facebook and social media, I'm probably friends with about 60 or 70 former cast members I worked with.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And we're all now in our 60s. I'm 62. I mean, we're all in that kind of age group.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so fun to talk, to go back and share pictures of things we did and talk with each other or send, you know, cute messages or things that happened and just, you know, there's one common theme that when people read our posts is that working at Disneyland was special because who we worked with.
Yeah.
And that was truly, it's an understatement. It really made, I would have worked there for free. the pay was horrible when I worked there. I think it was $3 an hour, which is sad. But but at the same time, I couldn't wait to go to work every day. It was it was that fun.
Yeah, but remember those ticket, those passes were like $12. So I mean, comparatively, I mean,
yeah, that's true. I mean, I worked 4 days. I could have gotten, to Disneyland, or 4 hours. I could have gotten to Disneyland. Yeah.
So, well, you need 4 days because you gotta pay for all the snacks and all the goodies.
Right,
that's true. Yeah, and they take a lot on taxes. So there you go.
Yeah, I was gonna say taxes and everything else.
Yeah, I think I took home about $1.75 an hour. So,
woo.
Yeah, I was wealthy.
Ooh, times are different. You just, every time I hear people talk about things back in the day, I just remember my mom all the time. She goes, you know, when I was younger, gas was 25 cents a gallon and we used to be able to get bread for a nickel. I'm like, yes, mom. You're 72 right now. I get it. That's fine. So, Dave, where can people find you online? Where can they find your works? Because I'm sure that there are people that are sold on this.
Yeah, the books.
All of our books at Barnes & Noble. So obviously that would be Amazon is probably the Amazon and Barnes & Noble. We do have ebooks for In the Shadow of the Matterhorn, which is the one, Teresa, you're reading now. And I also have that in audiobooks. Here's a funny, if you got time for one quick story.
Of course, yeah.
I was doing a podcast like this for a podcast called Tales from the Mouse House. The host of that show had such a cool voice, an amazing voice. And when I wrote In the Shadow of the Matterhorn, I called him up and I said, would you want to do the voiceover for do the narration of my book?
Yeah.
He says, I'd love to. So he did it. I paid him probably far less than he should have been paid. And he was a school teacher and he quit school and now narrates books for world-class authors.
Wow.
So I'm very proud that I was his first.
Yeah.
And so that was a cool little part of this Disney connection.
Yeah.
And they have a great podcast. And I've been on the good one with Lynn Barron and Ken.
The Sweet Spot. Mm-hmm.
The Sweet Spot. So I'm glad to be on yours because this has been so fun for me. You guys have been such gracious and wonderful hosts. So thank you.
Yeah.
And having great questions and being interested.
Like I said,
it's easy to be interested when you have such unique and cool stories.
we'll add you on our list because we have a list of a few people that we intend to have on again because there's just way too much to talk about in one, one episode worth of interview. I mean, we could probably talk for hours and hours, but that's what happens with Disneyland people, right? Like you get together and you get a lot of stuff.
D23, as you well know, there's nothing more fun than going to D23 and being surrounded by fellow Disney.
Yes.
And the politeness and the excuse me and the you first. it's as magical as being at the park sometimes, if not more.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the lines of tape on the floor and how people respect those magical tape lines.
It just Teresa could blows not get
my
over it.
Mind.
She couldn't get over it. She's like magical
else,
tape.
Anywhere else. I mean, right now, right, we've got our little please stand here. We're at the grocery store. People can't do that.
No.
But you put that in Disney. Oh, yes, we will respect the tape.
That's right. Well, it's like, does an alarm go off if I step over it?
Right, right.
We're also, we're so conditioned to queue up.
Yes, exactly.
In a ride, we're like, well, I guess this is where the line begins.
Yeah, well, the tape says you got to start here, so.
That's right.
Well,
anytime you want me back, please reach out. And this has been a treat for me and certainly hope your listeners have enjoyed hearing some of these fun little stories.
Oh gosh, yes. I just feel like they're really gonna love this. I can think of one person in particular. Lee is going to
Lee's
go.
Gonna love
he's
it.
Gonna go out and he's gonna buy these books. I know he is.
He's the history buff for sure.
Yes. Yes.
Good. Well, we're gonna a lot of history in every book. So
thank you so much, Dave. I feel like we I feel like we talked about a ton of stuff, but I feel like that we have so much more to learn from you. So we definitely will have you back on sometime. But thank you again so much for taking your time and sharing all of your fun stories and like crazy antics and memories with us.
Yes. Thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer James to get the answers to this week's seemingly never ending trivia.
Yes, it really went on and on, my friend. Our first question came from listener Lee S., and it was a three-parter. When did the Hatbox Ghost first appear in the Haunted Mansion? You are correct, in 1969, very briefly when it first opened.
Ew.
Why was he removed? Because the head-switching effect did not work properly. Another point for the hosts.
Yeah.
And when did he return? Oh, you were so close, but it's much more historic than you thought. 2015.
Oh.
Really?
So
I knew it lined up with a D23.
We're so old.
I knew that it lined up with an expo.
Time is just flying. All right. Question number two. This one was definitely the long tour around the park for us. From Melissa S., there are 14 churro carts in Disneyland and DCA. Which lands do not have one? You gave me 6. I was only looking for 4. Adventureland, which you said. Galaxy's Edge, which you said. Toontown, which you said. And Pacific Wharf, which you said. There is indeed a cart in Critter Country, which also does lemonade. And there is a cart in New Orleans Square. I'm pulling up my map now to
which
get
you said.
It right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just outside the Haunted Mansion, towards the Rivers of America.
Gotcha.
So the only one that we made up was Critter Country. I need to like pay attention. I don't remember where that is.
It's because we're so distracted by all the other good stuff.
Man, you definitely, it's a good help because there is indeed a churro cone, which you can go visit during Touch of Disney and make Teresa happy.
So Ace said he sent that one in about a year ago.
It was. It got lost in our trivia sheet.
I don't even remember what the ingredients were. That's great.
Yeah, that one got buried way down on our sheet, and I'm like, holy cow, there's still trivia down here. So, third question. The Jungle Cruise was used in an advertisement featuring Ed Sullivan. What product was he promoting? You should have listened to listener Karina. Because it was, in fact, Kodak's Brownie automatic movie camera.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Ed Sullivan sits on the boat and talks about how its nice focusing features help you capture all the moments on the cruise as you go around.
Wow.
I don't remember how I stumbled on it, but wow, that was amazing to see. Our last question this week from listener Ace. I thought it was super relevant as people are starting to make sourdough in quarantine, or at least were. In the Boat and Bakery walkthrough in California Adventure, you learn a lot about the sourdough they make. For example, what are the ingredients? And you should have listened to Tag for that fourth one, but you were right. The Boat and Mother dough are the starter, the flour, the water, and there is some salt. Mm-hmm. But I'm giving y'all a lot of credit for this week. You did really good.
Kate said she would have aced the churro question because she's an addict.
I think we all know that one. So I love our questions this week. They were a lot of fun. I think I say that every week because trivia is always fun. We love it here in Trivia Land. So
it is one of the most like commented about segments of the show that people love. So,
hey, you can be a part of it. Just send us an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic. And pretty soon, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.